Hello, and welcome to My Empty Hands, the podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and today I have another wonderful guest with me today. I have William McDonald today, and we're going to get into his journey and in the martial arts and whatever other items that we decide to talk about, we'll get to that as well. I usually kind of kick things off with just a tiny bit of my background. I started formerly in the martial arts in the 90s. Started in a school that was a Chinese Kenpo school. Since then, I have trained in American Kenpo, Taekwondo, Hapkido, Muay Thai. I've done some Western boxing and Capoeira. Let's see, did I forget any? I also recently started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so I stay pretty busy. So that is just kind of my little bit of background there, and we may get into more of my story as we go along, but I'm going to turn it over to our esteemed guest here. And how did the martial arts find you? When did you get started? And we'll just kind of go from there.
Well, first, Reggie, I'd like to thank you for having me on your show. It's always a great honor to meet great people like yourself to try to get the word of martial arts out there. I think that's very, very important, you know, and I actually create more of a unification between everyone and their systems. So thank you for that. But Reggie, yeah, thank you for having me on your show. A little bit about myself. My name is William McDonald. I've been in the martial art industry this year will be 53 years. I started when I was 7 years old, so I'll let you figure out how old I am. I dare not tell the truth, you know.
that works for me. I always say that.
right. So if you can do some math, you know how old I am. But you know, you're a Kenpo guy. I actually started in Kenpo when I was 7 years old, and what got me into it, my tell is that, and why I'm still doing what I do, is the roots of my journey that began when I was six years old. So when I was 6 years old, I was at school, elementary school, and I was waiting for my mom to pick me up from school. And on the school ground, there was like nobody really around. And this stray dog walks across the street. I pet the stray dog, and very friendly. And what I did not know is that there was three sixth graders that were there at that school on a jungle gym kind of behind me. You know, they were yelling and stuff like that, doing stuff. And they started approaching me very, very rapidly. And it looking back at it, they were actually showing off in front of these girls. But I got the crap beat out of me by three sixth graders for nothing. And I had a lot of anger in my heart. And literally, I got stomped on, got the wind knocked out of me. All I knew is that I was petting a dog, and that's the next thing. These kids jumped me. And this was way back when, right, in the 70s. So I had a lot of hate in my heart. And my dad, one day he took me to a drive-in theater, and I laid on the hood of my dad's car, and we watched this movie. And oh my God, I saw Bruce Lee for the very first time, and I knew what I wanted to do. At first it was about revenge, right? I never got my revenge. I still don't to this very day have a clue who those kids were. And, but I had a lot of anger, and I thought that's what I want to do. Because I saw this one guy, and he took care of business, and he came up with very little scratches at all. And I said, that's what I want to be like. And when I turned seven in July of that year, my dad signed me up in my first karate school. It was Kenpo Karate. It was Chinese Kenpo, as a matter of fact, Parker System. Parker was still around back in the day, and then it became, of course, tied into American karate or American Kenpo karate, I should say. And I got a chance to actually play both fields of the dynamics between the Parker system and the Tracy system back in the day. So I was very blessed. As time went on, my sensei at the time knew what happened, and he could tell the anger that I had inside of me, right? So time went on, that anger left. He channeled it into something more productive in martial arts. And that's where the roots started. And I told myself ever since I was a little kid, if I could give back what my instructors gave to me on the confidence and never letting, whether it's a kid or an adult, male, female, doesn't matter, anybody being bullied aggressively, where they lay their hands on you or threaten your life, I want to give back that gift that I was given of self-confidence. And that's what martial arts has done for me. So that's my foundation, my roots behind what I do.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, so with that first school, it was, just to kind of, clear it up there. So you were training, this school did both, the Tracy's and the Ed Parker American Kenpo curriculum?
Well, it started underneath the Parker system. And then, one thing led to another. My instructor, my original instructor left. He was, where I was from is Wichita Falls, which is just north of the DFW area. And there's a military base. It's a Shepherd Air Force base. So a lot of my guys that taught me back in the day, they were military. So they would be deported somewhere else, right? So someone else comes in. And then one thing led to another. Was not the Tracy, the Parker system. Tracy's took over and became the dominant name brand when it dealt with Kenpo there. Now there were still a couple of black belts that floated around that were the diehard Parker, and that they wouldn't change at all. And so I went toggled back and forth from them. And I started when I was seven. I got my first degree black belt in Kenpo when I turned 14. But then finally, there was such a turnover rate when you start to get to know your instructor. And if they were in the military, then they leave, right? The government tells them where they have to go next. So after I got my first degree black belt, I played judo, and got to back in the day, there was three, like in the most martial arts, there were three major belts before you get to black. There was white, there was green, brown, and then you get to blacks. And then it became more Americanized where you got multiple belts. And Parker was the same way. He started implementing a lot of different color belts and stuff like that, mainly because of student retention. That's what it's really about. But I also did Shotokan karate for a while. Never got black belts in either one of them. And then I had this Korean instructor. His name is Chun Han, and he was kind of fresh, straight out of Korea. So he had a broken English, and the old school day. How I got involved with him, he had a one-man band, which was just himself doing a demonstration publicly. And the things that I saw this man do that I never saw in Kenpo, I went, oh my God, I want to do that. You know, now that's really interesting. I joined Master Han. He was teaching Mudokon Taekwondo, and went back to white belt again. So it became very humbling whenever I switched systems. Every one of my instructors, they didn't honor the black belt that you receive from another style. Some of them do, but a lot of them, the ones that I went to, No, you different system, different methods, different way, start back to the white belt. So it became very humbling where ego didn't set in on black belt, what you have around your waist. So I came from that mind of school. You go today and you tell a person they're going to have to start all the way back down to white belt, and you start to see their teeth grit a little bit. You know, I see it all the time, you know, because it's the ego, you know, that they take too much into consideration about what's around their waist instead of the knowledge that they're about to gain in a different way, right?
Yeah, I can definitely relate. So, you know, I got to my green belt in the Chinese Kenpo school, and then when I started in American Kenpo, I had the thought that, well, I guess I should go back a little bit. I didn't really realize that there were different flavors of Kenpo at the time. And
right.
When I started at the school that I train with now, I had to go back to white belt, and I admit mm-hmm. that stung a little bit, but I'm glad that I was able to do that in that I've gained so much more knowledge as a lower belt.
Yes.
Now
yes.
than I did at my previous school. So,
it goes back to learning
and not right. just, you know, what's around your waist.
It goes back to that old parable about you have a cup. Is your cup, you know, full? If it is, you can't digest, you can't drink anymore, right? From that cup, it's a full cup. You have to empty it in order to be replenished anew, right? So the emptiness is digesting what you already know. That's the metaphor, not forgetting. And a lot of people think that, oh, I got to forget what I know. It's not about that. It's about refining. You keep what you know, and you use what you know to the best of your abilities. And then you take more knowledge, you know, and then you refine what you've already been given and what you are given into what you are, what you become, right? So it's that metaphor about, you know, absorbing knowledge, not forgetting about it, but putting aside, you know, and then comparing and contrasting the abilities and the teachings that are bestowed upon you. But I met you, was it last year or 2 years ago? I don't remember.
I think it was last year.
Last year, because I brought Bill Wallace in. I met him when I was 9 years old at my Kenpo school. And that's the other thing. So traditional Kenpo, I don't know where your instructor saw this, but traditional Kenpo, we never kicked above the waist level. That was it. We had close quarter combat, predominantly using hands. No kicks above the. It was like we never even heard of that. And then they bring Superfoot Wallace in when he was in his prime and he was a world champion and stuff like that, going through his competitions. And I saw this guy doing a seminar, and that son of a gun can kick to the head. I went, oh, looks like, okay. Traditionally, we were kind of touching the ideas about people kicking to the head, because you saw that a lot in Taekwondo people, right? And then that's my first time I ever met Bill Wallace, and we never knew each other, but I worked with him. And he came in a couple of times in my Kenpo school. They invited him in just really to better their skills in fighting. That's really what it was, right? And then when I got with Master Han and I saw those kicks to the head again, that reminded me of Bill Wallace. I went, oh, that's what I want to do. So for a while, I surrendered myself to Mudokwan, and I got a few black belts underneath my ranks underneath black belts in Mudokwan underneath Master Han. And then later I met General Choi Hung Hee, which is the founder who coined the name Taekwondo in 1956. And General Choi, who was a Rock Army general, I met him through a good buddy of mine who moved to the North. And I fell in love with ITF Taekwondo because the difference was like night and day. The difference was more scientific based on ITF Taekwondo. It was the traditional true Taekwondo. And where the other one became more, as it started progressing in the 80s and 90s, it started becoming more of an Olympic sport. And it started doing away with some of their self-defense stuff and focused more on just points. How many kicks can you get to the head? And I also really fell in love with a lot of board breaks in Taekwondo altogether, Mudokwon and ITF. But that too was like night and day. Whereas in the Mudokwon, you know, I was very good, very thought I was really great at doing breaks when I was kicking two, three, four boards at a time that were not spaced but put together. And I thought, wow, now I got power. And then I go over to General Choi, and his first degree black belt level is a minimum of six boards standing side kick, not moving in, just picking up that foot and breaking it 6 inches of wood without spacers. I went, holy crap, how do I do that? So I was really sold with General Choi's philosophy and his methods. And traditionally, I got in a traditional system, the highest rank is a sixth degree black belt in ITF Taekwondo. But then when General Choi passed, I kind of gave up. You know, I just kind of soul searched myself, and I created Tong Yalo, which is kind of what you know me doing now. And 30 years, this is, we're in the 30-year mark of the creation, which is a hybrid system that I coined 30 years ago, 1994, and it takes disciplines from where I've started all the way to where I'm at, and I merged them together. We got the Kempo Karate, of course, that was our foundation. We have all the kicks of Taekwondo. We have all the jiu-jitsu, because I played with jiu-jitsu and aikijitsu specifically. And Aikido for the redirection of energy, learning how to throw, learning how to fall properly, and jiu-jitsu for joint manipulation and some ground tactics. And then I've been involved in Muay Thai for, probably close to about 30 years as well. You know, so we took the strengths I did from each one of those and blended them together. I threw away the stuff that I felt doesn't work traditionally. For instance, I don't know, we don't do defense against horse soldiers on horses anymore. So some of the burial, right? Yeah, no. So we modernized it. Yeah. So I created the name Tong Yalo, which means path to unity, and it's become more of a science, because I also teach not only the technique, of the martial arts, but I also teach the basis of the psychology of an attack. So psychology is implemented in there. Kinesiology, which is understanding body mechanics, how to stretch properly. You learned a little bit about that through Bill Wallace and whoever else you train with. And the body movements itself, how to get the maximum power with the least amount of effort, right? So we got kinesiology. And then we also implement physics, understanding physics. And this is for all ages, including my youngers. They understand the basics of physics, and then we go into formulas as they progress into higher ranks, understanding how gravity takes effect in your techniques, how laws of inertia, centrifugal and centripetal forces affect your techniques. So it's now become, I teach actually what I call is a martial science, not a martial art, even though the roots are martial arts.
Gotcha. I wanted to get more into that, but I want to jump back real quick. In your early Kempo days, so with me having done, you know, kind of the two main systems I had, or two main flavors of Kempo, I've had a lot of difficulty, unlearning or getting away from things that I was used to doing. So I'm curious, when you were, since you're kind of bouncing back and forth between the flavors? Was there a lot of difficulty in picking up the techniques and the
curriculum? Are you talking about the difference between Tracy's and Parker's system or
yes,
something else?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, the foundation's the foundation, okay? So I don't know if you know, everybody's got their own storylines, what they know of what happened to the split and stuff like that from Raymond Chow and passed on to the knowledge of Ed Parker. He started saying, hey, let's change this. So even true Kimpo as we know today is a hybrid. It's not, this is Kimpo. It's really based on different formats from different styles, you know? But when the bouncing back between the two, the elements of the strikes, the elements of the blocks, the stances were the same. The differences were the self-defense techniques because, back in the day, there was a split between Al Tracy and Ed Parker. And Al Tracy, they took the East Coast, and Parker was saturating the West Coast and everything in between. And so personal and business complications were debated between both of them. And Tracy just took it to a different level when it came to self-defense. For instance, when I started, now I'm not sure if this has changed because it's been a long time since I've been in Kimpo. But when I started Ed Parker's system, we had 125 self-defense techniques, okay, from white all the way up. Now that's Ed Parker style. Now when you switched over to the Tracy's, there's over 300 self-defense techniques. So it's just the similarities, the methods are the same. The differences are really memorizing maybe a different form, as well as a lot more self-defense. So, which was great because that's what I would, for me, that just gave me more ammunition, right? Because remember my roots started me getting the crap beat out of me, right? So give me more. How can I, show me more techniques. Show me, because self-defense, I just, right before this conversation between you and I just had a student of mine and a longtime friend was debating about self-defense, predominantly some of the stuff that I teach in Tonghello. And I was telling him, I said, you're forgetting something. Maybe you don't know, but I'm going to teach this into you either way it goes. Self-defense is based on theory. That's it. There's no absolute self-defense techniques that works 100% of the time for 100% of the people. Doesn't work that way. We have different body masses. We have different genders, male and female. So a male strength is predominantly a lot more heavier on the upper body, whereas a female strength is on the lower half. All right? Their muscle structure is different. Different arm lengths, different leg lengths. So our sizes are different. So everything, whoever you talk to and say, well, this is going to work all the time. No, it's not. Okay. It's absolutely not. In from all of my years of knowing different styles and talking to different people and actually using the stuff, sadly enough, I'm not trying to gloat, but in street combat, not everything you learn works. It's not based on 100% factual. It's based on theory. That's it. So when I get into these debates with people about, oh, well, this doesn't work because you don't know, you haven't isolated the technique yet. If that's the only way you're teaching it, then you're right. It doesn't work now, but there's different steps. For instance, in Kimpo, there's different versions of a self-defense technique, just name something. You have a version and a B version, right? So Ed Parker knew that. There's not, it's not factual. It's not a proven one technique fits everybody. It doesn't do, it doesn't work that way. So why teach it that way? Right? So I don't know if I kind of went on a tangent that way, but to ideally the self-defense, give me more. When I was in Kempo, I wanted more because my base root was me having a lot of hate in my heart because I got beat up.
Gotcha. To yeah. kind of continue on that question. So mm-hmm. when you moved from Kempo to Taekwondo, sure. was there a learning curve or did you find difficulty in going, you know, switching from Kempo to Taekwondo or?
Well, I would question because I've already got a black belt in Kempo, right? And so I've already been, I hate to say this word, but it's true, crystallized in thought, okay? And so, especially at a younger age, it's like sometimes you have this ego as a younger age. Well, how is this going to work? This doesn't work, you know? My previous training says it doesn't work. And that's that emptying of the cup, right? I found out it does work, you know? Now, the differences I found out are a lot of kicks that, absolutely, 100% of the time in my background from my training. Kicking-wise, you can't beat Taekwondo stylist. That is their specialty on whatever, aerial kicks, ground kicks, whatever. Not saying that the other arts are not effective. That's what they specialize in. It's just like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Are you going to go toe-to-toe with a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu knowing that they're going to take you on the ground and you have no skill? Right? On the ground. That's foreign to you. If you're a boxer, no, you're not. You're going to be taken down to the ground. And now everything you learned just went out that window. Right? And vice versa. They don't want to be on the ground. They don't want to stand up. They like being on the ground. So they had their strengths. So my adjustment was differences in the kicks, the different knee loads, the delivery between them, the setups. Because the Taekwondo stylist, predominantly they used a lot of their self-defense, from another system, some of them from Hapkido, okay? More joint locks and stuff like that. Taekwondo itself, Muay Thai or ITF Taekwondo, traditional Taekwondo is designed to be a fighting art, a stand-up combative art, not, against headlocks and stuff like that. So they borrow a lot of their self-defense from other styles, in this case, predominantly Korean styles like Hapkido, as I mentioned. So, but there wasn't that much of a hardship once I learned that, wow, this really does work, and how I learned it really does work, is when my masters put me in the holds or put me in a joint lock I've never felt before or kicked me in a different way. Breaking boards. Nope. Traditionally, now Kempo's changed a little bit. They added on to it. Some people, they break boards in their schools. Kempo's not a breaking art. They don't break boards, right? But when I applied the kicking techniques that I would do on striking boards, it would take me more than one time to go through that board, even if it's a 1-inch board, because the delivery, the knee load is different. So the power structure is different. Kempo is based a lot on fluidity and speed. And that fluidity dynamic and the speed dynamic generates the power through your body weight, right? So the basic laws, I'm not going to dive into it too deep, but on a simplified version, the physics version of what creates power is mass, your body weight, times velocity square equals power. P equals mv square. What that means is that if you got the speed and everything, and you got your body mass, then that delivery of the technique will create power if you know how to generate the proper way. But the dynamics between one system and another was really the, as I'm reiterating, when it dealt with kicks, the chambering, the knee loads, because taekwondo's, you know, their kicks are based on more power, more power, more power. General Choi, he had a motto that he coined way back when. And the motto was this: victory with a single blow. Sounds pretty good to me. You hit me, I go down. So it looks like you win, right? Then why is Kenpo have all of these multiple strikes? If you look at that philosophy versus just focusing on, I'm going to hit you one time, finish the fight. I can go home. I can go eat some ice cream while you cry home to mama or something, right? You know, you sob up your tears. Well, I use this philosophy on this because, again, Reggie, I'm seeing it from different minds, different trainings from different people, and then I have teach my own philosophy and methods. I believe victory with a single blow is important. I hit my opponent, he goes down, why continue? I can walk away, done, with one shot. If you can do that, do it. It saves a lot of time, saves a lot of energy. But what if that one shot doesn't work? What if you miss? So I use this as an analogy. Do you have firearms?
Yes.
You do? What kind do you have?
It's actually my wife's, and I believe it is a 38.
A 38. Okay. So, 6 rounds in it, right?
Yes.
Okay. So whether you're talking about a revolver or a semi-automatic, let's just pretend whatever, whatever police officers use or you use, when you load that gun, how many rounds do you put in?
One at a time.
One at a time. And then you're ready for combat by loading it to its full capacity, probably, right?
Correct.
Something goes wrong. But you don't just put one bullet in and leave the rest on the shelf, do you?
Nope, not at all.
So same thing with a cop. If he just, let's just say law enforcement, goes out and finds himself in a nasty situation, he has to draw his firearm. He has one round. Whether it be against one person or multiple, let's just say one person, he better be a damn good shot the first time, especially with a moving target. It's one thing to hit a target that's not moving. When something's moving, it's different, right? And then you got to be so precise with that round, we're talking firearm now, that if you miss, what is that bullet going to hit? What's the next target that's the bullet's going to sink itself into that's not the one you wanted? Now you could have hurt an innocent bystander. But take that away. If I only shot one round and then I have to reload, I have to find something, or maybe I don't have anything else, and my buddy has a lot, I'm kind of screwed. The odds are not in my favor for that. Same thing with Kenpo. And I don't call all these things, you've probably heard, overkill techniques, right? Kenpo is noted for people say, oh, it's overkill, right? I get it. There's a lot of stuff going on because we work the body up and down, back and forth until we're done. And then we clear out to a safe distance. But ideally, what if that one victory with a single blow idea, you hit somebody, let's just say you really hit them, it doesn't affect them. That's that one round that you only had in your firearm, and now you run out of shots. So I think you have to have that mentality. If I can end it in one round, beautiful, don't do any more. But what if you miss? Or what if the shot hits and the person's still attacking you? What do you do next? With the mentality of the victory with a single blow, which is a great mentality, If that's all you're stuck with and it doesn't work, now you're going to freeze. And now the odds are against you. So in Kenpo and other systems that may be like Kenpo, where they have a rapid fire, we'll say, multiple shots, hand, foot, working the body high and low, you probably have a better offense and a defense that will work for you in your arsenal. Just like a firearm that has more than one round. That's my philosophy. I hope that makes sense to you.
Oh yes. I like it. It makes perfect sense. Gotta have the different tools in your toolbox. You know, you may not use every tool, but it's good to have it for when you need it. So I like that. Now, with you being more self-defense focused, I'm curious. I guess this will be kind of a two-part question, or at least kind of related. But first part of it is: did you do any kind of competing at all?
Yeah. I mean, I back in the older days, just with Kempo, when I was just in the karate field, we did the AOK type point fighting. I got really heavily involved more into the taekwondo tournaments. Not what you see nowadays, not this, it's continuous fighting. I liked the continuous fighting part. Okay. But it wasn't these taekwondo people that people look at and say, oh, that's taekwondo. Again, traditionally, that's not the way it looks in the tournaments. ITF taekwondo versus a lot of the other taekwondos will say, ITF is, first of all, it stands for International Taekwondo Federation. Okay. That's general choice, traditional taekwondo. Then it broke off into, because of politics, the Korean government developed something called the WTF, World Taekwondo, and they took it focused on sport. So a lot of people, they don't, especially in our area, in the like a Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's not too many of us ITF people that are around here at all. And so all you see is a lot of WTF sport taekwondo, and they don't like using their hands. They always have to use those legs. But in ITF, we use our hands. So I really liked that, and I got highly involved in competing internationally as well. So I was very blessed to compete both locally, nationally, and some international tournaments.
Okay, very nice. So actually, to kind of add on to that question or kind of change it a little bit, like I've watched some of the Olympic taekwondo, and I have a number of friends that are in taekwondo, and not a whole lot of fans for the Olympic style, and just kind of from with what your experience, what could be done to maybe change it or make it more interesting, or just maybe where would you like to see?
Honestly, if they were going to do taekwondo rules, so to speak, I would alter the rules a little bit. I don't mind the, where they always focus on those darn legs, which I'm a taekwondo style, so I have rights to criticize this. So I have all full rights. I'm a master in taekwondo as well. So I'm going to tell you, if you don't know how to use your hands and I crowd you, what do you want to do? You want to back up. Guess what? I learned your weakness. I'm going to crowd you. And God forbid I take you to the ground if I know how to ground work and you don't. My son, he's about to be 18, coming up just a few days away. I've been very blessed. The tournaments he's won, he's always won first place. He's never been to a taekwondo tournament. He's always been on these karate tournaments where it's point, separate. Now, because we fight, I like fighting, continuous fighting. But we fight, I will punch you to the head. ITF taekwondo does that. A WTF, the sport Olympic taekwondo, does not. So it's taking something away from that, because in reality, if that's how you're training, which is fine, I guess if all you're focusing on is a game, but isn't it supposed to be a martial art, which means an art of war? Well, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Reggie, headshots are legal in street fights. What do you think?
Are they sure?
I think groin shots are legal in street fights. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
the last time I checked. And I don't think, I may have been mistaken, I don't think anybody asked to referee a street fight. Not when I was encountering one. I don't know about yourself, but if that happens, let me know when how that goes. So I really think that the Taekwondo needs to be more focused on open targets. If the head's an open target, yeah, kick to the head. But if you're too close, use your hands. I have a buddy of mine that is a karate guy, and I'm holding a tournament later on this year, and next year. I used to have tournaments all over the time, place as well. One of my rules is I don't like restrictions. Remember, no punching to the head? No. We're going to punch the head. But the restrictions are this. I don't like some of the karate rules. I'm going to go on the karate side because I'm a karate guy too. So I'm going to criticize their rules. Here's my criticism. Where the hell did 2 points to the head come from on a foot technique? But if I hit you in the head with my hand, it's only 1 point. What's that about? Oh, I get it. They want kicks up. But here's the deal. What if a person can't kick to the head? What if they are immobile by flexibility or range of motion or maybe a hip displacement? They can't be a super foot. You're going to penalize them? I think that's BS. My tournaments, it's 1 point all the way across the board. You kick to the head, 1 point. You punch to the head, it's 1 point. Same thing to the body. You shouldn't be penalizing somebody just for a pretty kick to the head. I think we're focused on, again, developing the skills in the ring, but in a combat form for martial art purposes, still respecting your opponent, still having fun, no blood sport stuff, but equal out the points. Make it all 1 point. Because otherwise you're kind of discriminating against people who can't. And now they got to work harder to beat the people who can. What do you think about that?
No, I like that. I've actually never really thought about the difference in that. I mean, I've always been a kicker, and more interested in kicking. My first Kenpo school, my instructor was very familiar with Taekwondo and you know, trained Taekwondo. So
yes,
we were much more kickers than Kenpo schools typically are.
I've always
been a fan of it, and I do like that they're more flashier and
oh yeah,
it's much cooler to watch a nice, you know, hook kick versus
a
back knuckle to the face. But there's, you know, not everyone can just like you said, not everyone can kick to the head or kick to the head is as easy as someone else. And
yes, exactly.
When you have a tournament where you have different styles, you want to have more of a equal playing field. And yeah, if you have Taekwondo people at a tournament and you have your traditional karate guys or your Kenpo guys and stuff like that, kickers are going to have an advantage in that scenario where they get more
points.
So, yeah, I definitely think it should be more
even, Steven, right?
More even and just more in line with the idea that yes, this is a combat art. So, with the tournament, with the, you know, the point sparring situation, when I was coming up, watching the point sparring stuff was so exciting. I watch it now and I'm like, this is just a weird version of tag. And the people, they're not in fighting stances.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times that I've seen matches, they don't even have their hands up at all. And it doesn't look anything like what we're training to do. So I totally understand that there are some that you do have to make changes, but they don't have to be as drastic as some of these systems, tournaments, whatever are doing. Because I look at exactly. something like Kyokushin, and mm-hmm. You know, they don't have gear. They
right,
yeah, they don't punch to the head, but they pretty much do. They pretty much fight the way that they train. And I'm a big proponent of you know, you're going to fight how you train. And that's one of the things that I've been enjoying about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and kind of the same thing with Capoeira. You can
yes
pretty much go full bore, you know, full 100% in your, you know, quote unquote sparring than some of the other arts. And yes, granted, yeah, you can't do an arm break in Kenpo because you want your buddy to come back and train with you the next day. But
right.
I think we can definitely get closer in our tournaments to the real way that these
realism. Things are supposed to be more done. Realistic, right?
Yeah, yeah. So
you still got to learn to, you know, control, pull your punches and kicks where you're not going to send the person to the hospital. That's not we're not doing the Jean-Claude Van Damme blood sport reunion, right? But it is about that. And, you know, I think it's about that's now focused on the self-control part in the martial arts, right? So, cause you can know all the pretty techniques and everything. And you're hitting this bag, but that bag doesn't feel anything, right? But you hit a person that feels, you know, hey, you know what? I always say, okay, well, let's spar. Well, what's our power going to be like? I say, I'll tell you what, you choose, but I'm going to tell you, however much force you're going to throw into me, I'm coming back at you. So remember, if we're going to go all out, so am I. So there's that deliverance and that showing of respect, right? So it's like, oh, wow, this does hurt. Because if I hurt him, I don't want to get hit in the nose either, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I always have a laugh with people that I train with and we'll be sparring, whatever, or working a technique. And they, you know, give me a little shot or something, and they're so apologetic, which I appreciate sure. it, but I always tell them, unless I fall down to the ground and I'm out, or if I'm screaming, I'm fine. If you give me a little yeah. tap on the mm-hmm. nose, a kick gets through my defense and it gives me a little shot or whatever. If I'm not screaming, I'm all right. Let's keep going. And I think a lot of course, not every school is this way, and not every student is this way. But
sure,
I definitely feel like there is a bit of softening or whatnot in a lot of these schools these days. And
you know,
I think we need to
kind
of
you mentioned softening that kind of triggers something. In my training in the past, you also, this goes back to a question you asked, how was it different from the Kenpo versus like the Taekwondo training that I underwent with Grandmaster Han? When he first came in, he didn't have a lot of freaking students. I mean, literally when people showed up, they were going, oh God, I don't know if I want to train this way. Because Grandmaster Han, traditionally I was trained. Now, this is a totally different mindset because Kenpo schools didn't do this. Master Han would carry a shinai, which is a bamboo sword, in his dojang, in his school. And when you're doing like, let's just say, a front stance with a punch, if you didn't do it right, as he walked past you, bam, you're going to hit, that shinai hits that arm or that leg and you fix it. Because he had very little English dialect, so it's very hard broken English. That shinai was his English, and the mentality, the discipline was different. You do the shinai thing here, now you hit Junior with a bamboo sword, and you hit him, not tap him. Bam! See what's going to happen. Your Junior's dad's going to pull him. The discipline's different. I grew up kind of an old, this is my old school. You said you grew up back in the 90s, right? But 10 years, 20 years, 30 years before that, some of the discipline's different. In the karate section back in the day with some of our DFW greats, our Texas greats, like Pat Burleson and Alan Steen, that was the pioneers. I remember Pat Burleson telling me, Grandmaster Burleson, and he's no longer with us, but he told me a story that, and Joe Lewis did the same thing, as a matter of fact. They almost coincided. There were the days on testing your skill was we're going to go down to the local bar and let's see how it actually works. So that's the whole the old school blood and guts days, right? And where they didn't have the tournament pads on and stuff like that, but you still had to learn good self-control. But to test it out, they wouldn't, you know, there's only so much you could do in your classroom, because if you go full out, you're not going to have any more students left.
Exactly.
We have to pick a fight, I guess. You know, that's the old school mentality. You know, nowadays it's like, nah, we try to avoid all that stuff, right? But you just hope that your techniques truly work.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So I've got another question. I mean, of course, there's always with this show, there's always so much I want to get to, and so little time to do it. So, you know, we'll definitely have to do multiple parts sure. At some point. But got another
anything
question.
I can do to help you out.
And I've got another question before we move mm-hmm. into our lightning round here. This question is, since you're a fan of breaking and whatnot, what is your hardest, most difficult break or most interesting break you've done?
At one time back in the day when I was training hardcore all the time, and I tee up taekwondo. And like I said before, that breaks were like 1, 2, 3 boards if I'm lucky, right? And you got spacers and on concrete. Hey, try taking the spacers out. The maximum I've ever done, maximum, not saying I couldn't probably do more, but the max I maxed out at without spacers with concrete were 8 inches. That's 4 2-inch patio blocks, no spacers. But now the boards, and you can't hand hold these. You have to have a mechanical device to brace it. Maximum I've ever done for a competition, 15 boards, no spaces. Jump spinning back kick.
Very nice.
Oh. Yep. And I say that and people say, oh, there's no way you can. I got videos. I got photos. It just because you can't do it doesn't mean it can't be done. You got to understand the application and how it really works. You know, the beginner, no, you're not going to do that. You'd be lucky to break one board, right? So.
Very nice. Yeah, I like it. I've technically done a few board breaks back in the day. I don't really think about them too much, but now that I'm back into the Hapkido world, once I get up into the higher belts, then doing some breaks are required for some of the higher belts. So it's been kind of on my mind a little bit.
Reggie. Let me ask you, why do you think they're required? Because like Kenpo is not a requirement, at least I don't know now, but when I trained, mm-hmm. we didn't do that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Why do you think board breaks are, do you think that they're necessary? And if so, why?
I don't really think they're necessary. I think that they are a good kind of tool in that mm-hmm. one, it helps with the actual technique. If you don't have a good technique, you're not going to get through the board.
Exactly.
And then it's also a good mental and emotional thing. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. I've only broken like 1 or 2 boards. Maybe I've done like 3, but
right.
When I did them, that's a huge mental boost, ego boost, confidence boost. To be like, oh well, I've broken through this thing that, you know, I shouldn't be able to punch or kick this thing and get through it, but I was able to do that. So I think it's a good tool. Not maybe not necessary, but something that I think, you know, should be available. People should try it. And
so, you know, I I'll send you information, but I do board breaking workshops a lot, you know, and before I got into Taekwondo, I really never gave it much thought. But now I understand why. And it is, of course, it does build confidence, right? Like martial arts is directed to. But ideally is this. And when I would do competitions with other black belts from different styles, for instance, Goju. Goju is a really solid art, right? However, I've seen their black belts, and I'm not saying who, but black belts underneath the directorship of a really good master that I know is legitimate. And they couldn't break one board with a front kick. They slide off. So you don't, the way I teach it is this, is that board breaks, whether you do one or 15, whatever. The idea of that is to testing your skill on deliverance to see if you can generate maximum power with the least amount of effort. So one board, if you got the right board, number two, white pine, averages. Everybody's different. You and me are built differently slightly. But an average rib cage, on the rib cage, the lower rib frame, it takes about 16 pounds of pressure, ballpark, to snap an adult rib. That is what it's going to take to snap one board that I just told you about. So your technique, you really don't know, is it effective enough? Because I'm not going to say, okay, Reggie, hey, open your arms up. I want to see if my technique really works and sends you to the hospital. We can't do that. So we have to have a measuring tool. That measuring tool, one of them are the boards. Because if you can't get through that with a simple front kick or a punch, are you doing the technique right? If you're not doing it right, how are you going to perform on the street with victory with a single blow? That type of mentality.
Exactly. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to move into our lightning round here. Just a few questions as we head towards wrapping up here. First okay. question being, do you have a favorite technique?
Favorite technique. I like the combination back fist, hook kick.
Very nice.
That's,
I like it.
That's my favorite.
I like it. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Wow. You opened up a can of worms. I don't really have a favorite form because I really focus my structure a lot of self-defense. I like Panther set in the Kenpo. Uh-huh. I like some of the Taekwondo forms. Well, one of my favorites is Tong Il, not because of my system's name, but it's a sixth degree form in ITF Taekwondo. It's a beautiful form, very powerful and very agile as well. So those are probably my two favorites.
Very nice. I like it. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Panther set, or also known mm-hmm. as book set.
In the Kempo world.
So that's always been one of my favorites, and typically do it a couple times a week. So.
Oh, cool. Very nice.
I like it. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
That's not part of my body. I always like traditional weapons besides the guns that we have in today's times. But traditional weapons, I love sword and I love nunchuck.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. I like it. All right. And then our final question, if there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, kind of outside of, Kempo, so I usually phrase this with besides Ed Parker, but anyone, and you can include people that you have trained with if you want, but anyone ever existed or fictional or non-fictional that you'd like to train with, who would that be?
Well, very blessed to always be in contact and train with Bill Wallace. So I'm very blessed with that. Superfoot's a magnificent educator. Not alive. Anybody says differently, I don't know why. In my times, Bruce Lee. I'd love to pick his brain, you know, and technique wise. I would also, honestly, I never trained with him, but I've seen him in action in Hawaii. I would really like to train with Ed Parker. I would love to pick his brain as well back in the day. Fictional. I don't know. I'm always a John Wick fan. I'd like to train with that kind of complexity, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I like it. Great answer. All right. So now we are moving into our time for shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything you want, or if there's anything that we haven't covered that you want to make sure that we get out there today, you have the floor. Say whatever you like, and then we'll close out from there.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I'm great at promoting events. I hold some events such as where I bet you. I brought in Bill Superfoot Wallace to our area. I bring him in a lot. I try to bring in other legends, Don Wilson, Cynthia Rothrock, a few others. If you're interested in learning from some of these great legends in martial arts, come look me up, William McDonald. Tag it with either Grandmaster or martial arts. I'm all over the place. We're about to hold a board breaking workshop the end of March here in Coppell. And I've got to promote my system, Tong Ilo Martial Science. It's been around now, incredible, by many martial artists sitting on test boards from different systems. It's been around now for 30 years, started in 1994.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, and I will make sure to put links in to all your things here in the show notes. But
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Once again, I
really enjoyed you as a host. I don't know if you knew this. I may have told you this. I used to do my own podcast show. Actually, it was the very first martial art podcast when podcasts began back in the day, called Karate Cast Network. And I had like 53 countries worldwide tap into our show. And I want to say that the way you're running this, you've got a great voice. You got great talent and good questions for your interviews.
well, thank you. I enjoy doing the show. I love getting to talk to people and hear their stories. And I've just been really, really happy at the way things have been going. And
Yes, sir.
Well, as long as people such as yourself continue to agree to be on, I will keep on keeping on and trying to keep these stories out there for people to hear. So
I can only wish you the best, my friend.
All right. Well, yes. Thank you for being on, and I will be in touch when this is ready to go out. But thank you for sharing your story, and we'll definitely have to get into more items on another episode at another time. But yeah, thank you.
Sure. No problem. Let me know if you need anything.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.